My psychologist at one point said, you know, you're so miserable at GE and you're, you know, bitching about it. What would you like to do? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, the question that I think every person should be asked, what would you do if you could do anything you wanted to do? That's a very clarifying question. What would you do if you could do anything you wanted to do? And I said, oh, I'd be a Jesuit priest. And he said, why don't you? And I thought, yeah, why don't I?
Welcome to Second Act Stories, a podcast that looks at people who've made major career changes and are pursuing more rewarding lives in a second act. It's an honor to have Father James Martin as the guest for today's episode. He's an American Jesuit priest who's written a dozen books, including the New York Times bestsellers, The Jesuit Guide to Almost Anything, Building a Bridge, and Jesus, a Pilgrimage. He's got a huge following on Facebook and Twitter, and he is a frequent resource to the broadest range of journalists in print and on television. But we're talking to him today about his own second act, when he made the move from a promising career at General Electric to embrace a life of poverty, chastity, and obedience as a Jesuit priest. It's one of the most dramatic life changes that you can imagine. Here are the highlights of my interview with Father James Martin. I'd love to start with just a word about your own upbringing and sort of religion in your early years.
Sure. I was born in Philadelphia and was raised in a family that was Catholic, but not super Catholic. I say that they were lukewarm Catholics. I went through all the things that a Catholic boy would go through. So I was baptized, first Holy Communion, confirmation, things like that. We went to church, I'd say most Sundays, not every Sunday. And when I was, in college, I more or less continued, but I wasn't from a very religious family, so my entrance to the Jesuits was a surprise to everybody.
Okay. Take us through the University of Pennsylvania, Wharton, and what were you hoping to get out of your college experience?
Money.
Okay. That's what you were focused on a job?
Sure. The main reason that people go to Wharton is so that they can get a good job, and that was why I went. I didn't come from a family that had a lot of money, so obviously you have to work, right? And if you got to work, you got to get a job. And so where would you want to go to school to get a good job? And that would be Wharton. I studied finance because I thought it was the most interesting of all the subjects there. And I was very happy with Wharton, and it certainly gave me what I wanted, which was a good job. It really made interviewing ridiculously easy. You just had to, at that point in time, just stick a resume in a little slot in a wall, sort of jobs listed, and you got tons and tons of interviews, and I got lots of offers, and I ended up at GE in New York in 1982.
So that was the time that Jack Welch had just come to power.
That's right.
What was the allure of GE for you?
Well, certainly it was, one of the top companies that had a great training program. It had something called the Financial Management Program that I was accepted into, which was a two-year training program that took you through rotational job assignments and gave you exposure to accounting, finance, and all sorts of different departments. And, I enjoyed the idea of living in New York. I thought that was exciting, and it was. And GE just seemed like limitless possibility. I mean, General Electric, for Pete's sake, especially in the 80s, was just go. And, there was no limit to how high you could go or how much money you could make or where the company was going. It was just expanding, kind of left and right.
One of Father Martin's first books is called In Good Company, The Fast Track from the Corporate World to Poverty, Chastity, and Obedience. And it details his time at GE and his decision to enter the priesthood. It's a great book, and I read it in advance of my interview with Father Martin. Tell us about your initial experiences at GE. From the book, it's clear that it became increasingly difficult part of your life.
The subtext of the book is, Jesuits good, GE bad. I mean, that's basically...
Those are the highlights.
Yeah, right? That's the highlight. My experiences at GE are all accurate in there. I mean, I had a lot of good people, a lot of good friends who I worked with. I would look back on it and say this, business is a real vocation for a lot of people. For a lot of people probably listening to this podcast, it wasn't my vocation. And so I grew increasingly miserable in the job and really just couldn't find a way out and couldn't see a way out because, Wharton didn't really prepare me for anything other than business. So I thought, what else am I going to do? I mean, what am I supposed to be like? I often thought can't be like a trapeze artist in the circus. I can't be a baseball player. What am I supposed to do? So I was really stuck, and, you know, but God found a way to kind of get me out of all that.
There's one moment in the book, and it just seems kind of like a tipping point. I'm wondering if you could describe it, where your boss calls you into her office and says, you're a liar.
Yeah, it was one of many tipping points. It's a very complicated situation, but basically she accused me of being a liar, which I was not, and am not. But there were other examples of people being mistreated, not just me, that I looked upon. And I remember thinking, I don't know if I can desire to become these people, right? I mean, I don't know if I can sort of aspire to be the kind of people that, at least as I saw it, tended to rise up in the corporation. And, you know, the ethos of Jack Welch was pretty bottom line driven. It had very little to do with human dignity, certainly. I mean, I think that's a fair statement. It was more about the bottom line and, you know, up or out, as we used to say at GE.
His book describes a lot of other difficult situations. And over his 6 years at GE, it led him to being miserable and even to developing physical illnesses. And that ultimately led him to the Society of Jesus, a scholarly religious congregation of the Catholic Church, which was founded in Spain in the 16th century. Their members are called Jesuits. They take a vow of poverty, chastity, and later obedience. How did you first start exploring the priesthood?
I came home one night and I was dead tired, and I remember I had a bowl of pasta and sauce, and I was sitting on the couch, and there was a TV show on PBS about a Trappist monk named Thomas Merton. And he was born in France, studied in England, eventually went to Columbia University and led a fairly dissolute life, and then gave it all up and entered a Trappist monastery. It's a beautiful book. It's called The Seven-Story Mountain, and that really just changed my life. I had no clue that this was going to lead to the priesthood. I just thought this is really beautiful and interesting. And then gradually I started to think, well, maybe I'd like to do something like this.
The job had become so difficult for this aspiring executive that he started seeing a psychologist to sort through these issues. And it led to what Father Martin called a clarifying question.
My psychologist at one point said, you know, you're so miserable at GE and you're, you know, bitching about it. What would you like to do? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, the question that I think every person should be asked, what would you do if you could do anything you wanted to do? That's a very clarifying question. What would you do if you could do anything you wanted to do? And I said, oh, I'd be a Jesuit priest. And he said, why don't you? And I thought, yeah, why don't I? I remember sitting in his office and thinking, why don't I do that?
So Jim Martin started exploring the priesthood.
You know, I did a terrible job exploring the Jesuits and the priesthood. From the time that I decided that I wanted to enter, which was in May of 1988 to August, that's how long the application took, I should have been doing a lot more discernment and thinking. And I mean, I didn't explore, for example, any other religious order. I didn't talk to the Dominicans, the Franciscans, the Benedictines, which I should have. I didn't look at the diocesan priesthood very carefully. Part of it was that I was so miserable with GE at GE that I felt this push. But also, the Jesuits seemed really exciting to me, and that just seemed like a great fit. I thought, well, you know, where else would I go? So yeah, I did explore, but I think that I should have explored a little more carefully. But, you know, in the end, it worked out okay. I'm still here.
It all happened very quickly from there. He left GE in late July, not even knowing if the Jesuits would accept him.
I think that was probably the bravest thing I've ever done. I quit without knowing what I was going to do.
But 2 weeks later, on August 15th, he got the news that he had been accepted.
I called in all my friends and said, take what you want, books, bookcases, furniture. I was living with two other friends. We gave furniture to Goodwill and to the St. Vincent de Paul Society. I gave my parents my car for a dollar. I gave them $30,000, roughly, of what I had saved. And it was profoundly freeing. I was so excited. I thought, I don't need all this stuff. I couldn't wait to get to the novitiate. It was just, I can remember, as I'm sitting here, I remember the excitement and thrill of just something totally new. Something totally new, totally good, totally wonderful, romantic. You know, I'm still amazed more people don't join. And so it was very freeing. And, you know, that's the vow of poverty, which is what that is, which is getting rid of what you own and depending on the Jesuits. Very freeing. That's the one vow that I've never, well, not always, but that I really found most freeing of all of them. The first 2 years as a Jesuit in the novitiate were just the best years of my life. It was just fascinating and exciting and moving and relaxing, right? I mean, it wasn't go, go, go. We had a lot of time for prayer. We worked in ministries. I worked in a hospital for the seriously ill. I worked in a homeless shelter. I worked with the poor boys on the Lower East Side in a school. I worked with Mother Teresa's sisters in Jamaica. So it was fascinating, and learning about the Jesuits and praying and living in community. It was great.
I want to switch gears. So you have what appears to be a really interesting job.
I sure do.
Tell me, you know, what are your responsibilities? What do you do here at American Media?
Well, so I'm a Jesuit priest, and we are missioned, meaning we're sent by our superiors to do certain things. And I have been missioned to America Media, which is a Catholic media ministry. And I'm editor at large. I've been here for 20 years. I've had different hats. So I've been associate editor, which was, you know, a regular editor, culture editor, associate publisher, no, acting publisher for a while.
Okay.
And now I'm editor at large, which means basically I write. I write books that bring in money for the magazine, and I do a lot of media stuff and social media stuff, but I basically write. That's my vocation within a vocation.
So you've written like a dozen books, including a number of New York Times bestsellers. And yet, as I read through your first book, it didn't seem like anything in your background suggested you were like focused on writing.
No, not at all.
Sort of bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, I liked writing. I was on the student newspaper in junior high school and high school, and on the yearbook. And I enjoyed English a lot. But you know, once I got to Wharton, I remember my faculty advisor said I wanted to take an elective. And at Wharton, at least at the time, they encouraged you not to take any difficult electives, right? So just focus on accounting and finance. Right, okay. Right. So take all these, basically, we used to call it guts. Take these easy electives. And he said, don't take that, because no one will give a damn, you know, at Goldman Sachs, you know, what you scored in your American poetry class. They're not going to care if you know Walt Whitman. So I didn't listen to him, took it. It was my favorite course at Penn. And, you know, that's – so I enjoyed writing. I enjoyed reading. But it wasn't until I was in East Africa working with refugees that I thought I really want to tell these stories, you know. And that's how I ended up kind of getting into America Magazine.
You've sort of answered this a little bit earlier, but what advice would you give to someone who is considering either a major career change or a major life change?
Well, that's under the category or rubric of discernment, as we Jesuits like to say. So the first thing would be pay attention to your deepest desires. Those are, in religious language, those are God's desires for you. How else would God call you other than to look at your deepest desires? What gets you excited? What motivates you? What is appealing? What do you find romantic? What do you find interesting? And then explore. You know, try to explore and try to see how your skills. I mean, I you know, even if I wanted to be a baseball player at age 57 and not a great athlete, I wouldn't be able to be a baseball player. So you have to understand those desires in the light of your talents and your skills and your background. But usually that's not the restriction. The restriction is usually people don't allow themselves to dream. So I'd say, you know, as St. Ignatius said, pray to understand your desires and follow them and trust them, and that this is one way that God has of calling you.
As the title of your book suggests, you left the corporate world for a new position that involves poverty, chastity, and obedience. Are you happier today as a Jesuit?
Oh, yes. That's the easiest question yet. Yeah. I mean, not only because I am happy as a Jesuit, but because I was pretty miserable by the end. I really, you know, the work in itself. So by the end, I left finance and accounting and went into human resources. I actually enjoyed that. That was good dealing with people. The, I don't know if I can say it, the bullshit that
you
I had.
You can say that.
Yeah, the bullshit that I had to deal with in terms of, you know, how people were treated was just unbelievable. I mean, I really, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what I heard. You know, as an HR person, what you hear behind closed doors, you know, about certain people, sexist, homophobic, cruel, and, you know, a lot of power games that you would see played. And I just didn't like it. And quite a few of the managers were just jerks. You know, some of them were lovely and really kind, but some of them were just jerks. And it was that kind of macho, aggressive, hyper-aggressive attitude that I, you know, ran across that I just didn't like.
So, interesting question. There are jerks in any large organization.
Yeah, even in the church.
I was going to ask, are there jerks in the Catholic Church? Oh, yeah. Church?
Plenty of them.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I know them. Yeah, it's not immune, but it enables you to live a non-jerky life a lot easier than GE did.
So I want you to consider if you graduated and you took a job at maybe a friendlier company, yes, a different sort of company than a GE, do you think that might have worked out?
I often think if I had gotten a job that was where people were a little less, shall we say, ruthless, I might not be a Jesuit, because it really sort of made me miserable and made me vulnerable. I think, and that's how God tends to break in those times. I think God, you know, we have our defenses up so carefully. You know, they're built. We build them, and they started to be built at Wharton. And it wasn't until those defenses were vulnerable, you know, thanks to my being miserable, and I ended up getting some stress-related illnesses, and that really broke me open and enabled God to break in a little bit.
I only got to spend about 30 minutes with Father James Martin, but I have to say I'll never forget this interview. He's so intelligent, so well-spoken, and it's all in sort of an everyman kind of way. I can't thank him enough for taking the time to sit down with me. A special thank you as well to Father Bob Van Eck, who is also a Jesuit priest and connected me with Father Martin. He is the pastor at the wonderful Church of St. Francis Xavier in New York City, which my wife and I attend. If you're considering your own second act, we hope you'll take Father Martin's advice and ask the one clarifying question. What would you do if you could do anything you wanted to do? It's so powerful, let me share that question with you one more time. What would you do if you could do anything you wanted to do? We hope you'll keep listening. A new second act story is just around the corner.